The freedom of the all-inclusive resort-style living awaits at Anna Maria Creekside. They're the leader in affordable month-to-month retirement living. For a complimentary tour and meal, call Anna Maria Creekside, 774-1822. 774-1822.
Well, you want to get a war of words going on. Or some people, beating up on each other figuratively. Start kicking around the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement. Depending on where you go and who you talk to, you could hear very different stories. I wanted to talk to some people with dogs in the fight, or frankly, cattle in the fight, as this were. Joining me here in studio, we have Larry Nicholson. Larry, you have a ranch off the Klamath Basin, right?
Yeah, I'm a fifth generation of rancher. We got it back in the mid 1800s.
So when
cattle
you're,
ranch.
So when you're not dealing with Medford School Board situations, you're ranching out there and
trying to save our water.
Okay, trying to save water. Okay, very good. And we also have in studio Tom Malams, who is the president of the Klamath Off Project Water Users Organization. How are you doing this morning, Tom?
Hey, I'm doing great.
All right. So you folks had about a little less than a week ago. Was it last Tuesday, I believe, you ended up having a big public meeting?
Yes, a public comment meeting in Klamath Falls that we invited everybody to and encouraged everybody to come, whether they were for it or against it.
What ended up happening at that meeting?
We had a pretty good turnout. I think we had about 350 people. The 400 people showed up. And the interesting part was there was absolutely not one person that was for dam removal or the KBRA. Those that were supporting it, they chose to boycott it, including our county commissioners. They had their own little sub-meeting at a restaurant, invitation only, and they had about 50 people showed up to that.
All right. So Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, I guess effectively the bottom line here, maybe you could explain. This is about yanking out all the hydropower, for one thing, right?
Yes.
The hydro goes away. The dams go away. And then we're effectively arguing about where the water goes, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. What does it mean for the two of you at this point being off-project irrigators, meaning you're not, what, farmers directly there?
No, we're off-project means that we are not in the Klamath Reclamation Project area. That's a federal water project. So anybody that's not in that geographic area is considered off-project.
And they're the ones that get benefit, the usage of the water out of Klamath Lake.
I see.
We get our water from drainage systems before it enters Klamath Lake.
So why are you concerned with what ends up happening with Klamath Lake, given that you have access to the water before it drains into the lake?
Well, go ahead, Tom.
The Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, in it, they advocate for granting the Klamath Tribe a massive in-stream claim, which is technically more water than exists. So if they get that claim, as they're advocating in the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, they're bypassing the state adjudication process, which has been in effect for over 100 years.
Now, when you say state adjudication process, for a lot of folks listening, okay, that doesn't mean anything. Does that mean that they eliminate your water right?
They can supersede our water right by bypassing the adjudication process. The adjudication process is the legal process to prioritize who has what water right as a time is first in line, first in time, I think they call it.
Yeah, you go to court, right?
Right. That's a court case, and it's been in court case for a lot of years.
All right. So the Klamath, with the KBRA as it is written, although as you have mentioned, it changes. It seems to change from week to week.
Yes.
Things get added or taken away from it. The Klamath Tribe ends up having claim to more water than traditionally falls in that area, or
yes,
more water which ends up coming into that area.
It's not only the Klamath Tribe. You know, you look throughout the agreement, there's so many interested parties to this. The in-stream flow demand downstream for salmon has increased. The amount of water they want in the refuges has increased to way more than what they ever use. And so the allocations amounts that they've set at levels that are really unsustainable, and what we fear, yeah, several things is, you know, there's about 40,000 acre feet of water that Jackson County gets.
That's through the Talent Irrigation District.
Through the Talent Irrigation District that everybody's silent on right now, but there is not enough water. They are claiming so much water through this agreement that it's surely to be tapped.
So would that TID allocation probably be eliminated or just reduced sharply? Do we know at this point? You guys are reading the agreement.
Don't really know. Right now, the Rogue project is not in the agreement. But that really is immaterial, because if this tribe gets this in-stream claim, if during a season there is not enough water in the in-stream, they measure it, then they will go up down the line to see who gets shut off. And the tribe, their priority date is going to be what they call time immemorial, which means they're first.
Which means that they technically here first. They get all the water rights. They were here first. It's going to be – they will be the controlling authority with whether or not people in the Rogue Valley get to farm, eat, or irrigate. Correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
That's a problem.
It's a huge problem.
You would think that there would be more people around the Rogue Valley clamoring for a seat at this table. But there sure doesn't seem to have been a lot of noise made.
Well, there was a little bit of noise made earlier because this language was in the document itself. We came over a couple of times and gave presentations to the Resource Advisory Board for the county commissioners, and they were extremely upset because they didn't even know about it. Very shortly after that language was taken out of the agreement. That shows the political power that exists here in the Rogue Basin.
Does Jackson County, though, have a direct seat at the table?
They never have, and then will never have. They are not adding seats in the table there. It's at the 11th hour now. The only group that's been added for some time is another group that's been added into the upper basin. They're a small group that's financed by an environmental group.
So all that's really happened here is in the agreement they took it out instead of addressing that issue. They took it out, but being silent on it does not in any way guarantee that they're going to be able to keep it.
So have we been asleep at the switch down here? Has government been asleep at the switch?
This is a complex issue, Bill. You know, you look at you try to get your arms around the KBRA, Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, and there's so many components to it, so many interested parties. You know, it's difficult to convey. You know, what your point is on any certain issue. So the complexity of it's made it really difficult for people to understand.
But distilling it down to a few salient points,
right.
Pacific Power takes out the dams, takes out the hydropower. Taxpayers, ratepayers, in other words, are responsible for all of Pacific Power's problems and liabilities, correct?
Yes.
They don't have to pay for it. We have to pay for it.
Yes.
Area farmers are hurt by the TID, possibly losing a third of its water, right?
Right.
And we have the Indian tribes and the fish effectively controlling more water than exists.
That is absolutely correct.
That's the problem.
How can this even go through as written then? Because it appears to be a huge giveaway to Pacific Power and Warren Buffett. Boy, Warren Buffett must love this deal.
Oh, absolutely. It's the sweetest sweetheart deal that have ever been in the century. It absolutely is.
Well, Pacific Power was on our side for a long time, but they made it almost overnight. You know, they made it impossible for them to deal with it. They were not going to renew their license, and almost overnight they switched sides because they saw the writing on the wall that they were not going to be able to renew the licenses for those dams. They were going to make it economically impossible for them, not viable for them, to even build fish ladders or anything else
to make the dams a little more fish friendly, right? We're not going to do that.
And they were more than willing to do that. But, you know, the political power on this thing has just been tremendous to tear out those dams.
All right. Larry Nicholson and Tom Malams once again. And Tom is president of the Klamath Off Project Water Users Organization. Larry, just of course, when he's not doing his school board work down here, just ranching cattle off the project there. And Ann, thank you for hanging on. Welcome. What's on your mind?
I heard some time back that Jason Atkinson, who I think is going to run for governor, is on the board of directors of Pacific Power, and you never hear anything about that. I think he has a conflict of interest, and it should be disclosed because he's not for the people when he is backing something like this, which Pacific Power has a lot to gain.
All right, Ann, thank you for your opinion. Gentlemen, can you comment on
absolutely
the senatorial connection?
Yes, there's a very definite connection there. When Jason Atkinson voted for dam removal bill on Senate Bill 76 here this spring, he did admit that he has a conflict of interest. He is a paid consultant, as I understand it, from the Senate testimony there for Pacific Power.
So he's not on the board, but he's a consultant?
I don't believe he's on the board, but he is a paid consultant, and he acknowledged that conflict of interest And as long as he acknowledges that fact, then he can still vote for it. And even on the Senate floor, he admitted that his constituents do not want the dams to come out. But he said, I'm going to vote for it anyway.
So effectively, he's a hired gun, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, he is.
For Pacific Power. Larry, do you want to add something to that? Or?
No, that's exactly what I was going to say. But.
Oh, okay. What can be done, since this is the 11th hour, what can we, the people, be doing at this point in time? I mean, I've talked about, and I've had Kathy Lehman and various other people connected with Stewards of the Range that have talked about the power of coordination to actually demand your seat at the table. And the coordination statutes, which are involved in all of these federal statutes that we're having to deal with right now, would seem to at least throw a monkey wrench into the process right now and at least delay it. Because we can call this 11th hour, but we're not talking about pulling out, what, dams until 2020. Isn't there a lot of time yet that that could be done to change this or modify it somehow?
I think there is a lot of time here yet, but you have to realize that the powers to be in Washington, D.C. and in the state governments of California and Oregon want this to go through no matter what. In fact, as we speak, right this very moment in Washington, D.C., they're having a meeting. They're calling it the Go Forward Federal Draft Legislation Committee meeting. They're drafting legislation in the federal legislatures to make this all go through.
So their point of view is hurry up, get it all signed, get everybody signed on that is there at the table right now, and then we declare victory and go home.
That's right. And they're supposed to have all these scientific studies done before anything else is done.
About sediment and various other issues.
And right? They haven't even started them yet. The sad part is there's already two studies that have been done, funded by the federal government, on dam removal costs. And the one is called the CDM report. Mm-hmm. That was done over a year ago. It was kept secret by the Department of Interior. It says that the dam removal cost is going to be a minimum of $880 million up to a high as $1.9 billion.
Now, does this include the cost of removal of sediment?
Yes, it does address part of that, but they say there's so many data gaps that they don't know exactly what it's going to cost.
What kind of costs will this end up hitting Pacific Power ratepayers? Because as you have mentioned before, like you and Larry both talked about, Tom, Pacific Power is not paying for this.
That's exactly
they
right.
They get their guaranteed as a utility 10% rate of return no matter what, come hell or high water. So if Pacific Power ends up having to pay to truck sediment away or whatever the case might be, it's on the ratepayers. The ratepayers, it's almost like they're nationalizing the Pacific Power industry.
Well, Senate Bill 76 puts a somewhat of a cap on the cost for the ratepayers, but that's the way it's worded is there's surcharges and then there's rate increases, and they are definitely separate. So the ratepayers aren't protected that much. And then the state of California and the state of Oregon, they've drafted into that legislation that they're safe. Well, if they start taking the dams out and it's not going to cost that $450 million, which they say it won't cost more than that, if it ends up costing $3 or $4 billion, which is what the other report says and the FERC relicensing report says, somebody has to pay that. And my belief is it's going to be burdened onto the ratepayers and the taxpayers.
Kind of remind you of the energy tax credits here most recently when they run that through, if mm-hmm. you recall recently, by saying it's not going to cost Oregonians any more than $1.3 million.
Right.
And then it ended up costing 40 times more that the first year.
Okay.
And that was to all these companies that actually went out of business for green energy, those types of things.
Sure.
So, it's just, what do you want to believe?
Well, I'm not believing the people that are saying that we're going to have sunshine and lollipops and rainbows and everything, and the fish are going to be happy. And other people have told me that when they pull these dams out, one of the plans is just to let the toxic sediment just flush down the river. Is that the case?
That is the case. Well, I have to back up a little bit. They don't know what the case is going to be until they do these other studies. But the initial response was they're going to flush it right down the river because they keep referring to like Savage Rapids Dam. They got away with it there and it didn't really do anything. But you can't compare the Rogue River to the Klamath River. The Klamath River comes out of Klamath Lake, which has always been, let's say it what it is, it's polluted. And it had always been that. Even the very first settlers, the explorers that came through the Klamath Basin, in their diaries from clear back in the early 1800s, says they would camp miles away from Klamath Lake or the Klamath River because of the stink. The water wasn't even fit for their livestock to drink. The bugs were so bad. The smell was so bad.
And this was back then.
Well, yes. It's a dying lake. I mean, someday it'll be a river again because the lake is filling up with algae over time. And so it'll be gone, you know, way past our time. But it's a dying lake. And we can't change that.
No, the natural occurring phosphorus.
But are they trying to change it? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, yeah, they're trying to get salmon back up in there again for some reason. And the narrative, you're not even going to get salmon in there. There's a dam that actually is up by Keno that's staying in. So their proposal is to let fish go up as far as they can. Then they're going to truck the salmon over the bridge and put them in the Klamath Lake.
The polluted lake.
The polluted lake, yes.
Okay, all right. The bottom line for people like you, off-project folks, what does it do for your livelihood, your wealth generating, your attempt to grow food and bring it to market? What does it do to you?
It will eliminate our possibilities in two different aspects. The KBRA, just by sheer advocating for this in-stream claim for the Klamath tribe, is trying to bypass the adjudication process. In the adjudication process, we know that the Klamath tribe will not get that massive in-stream claim. And that's through another very technical part of it's called the Adair case.
Which we can't really get into, but...
Right. But that's going to limit how much they will get through the adjudication process. So if they get this in-stream claim, essentially it will eliminate a lot of the upper basin water.
Does this mean that you can stay in business, but you – I'm trying to understand. I am not an irrigator. I'm not a farmer, not a rancher. Does this mean you then have to go to the Klamath tribe in order to try to get any water? Would you then just be negotiating with them and purchasing from them?
I don't think you can purchase the water, but if they have an in-stream claim, the Klamath tribe can make a call on your water, or some other environmental group can also make a call on that in-stream claim as well.
And they just say that you get shut off because your water eventually flows into the Klamath lake.
Yeah, it'll just be a projection saying that we don't project there's going to be enough water for the salmon in 2010, so we're going to go ahead and call on Tom's water, on Larry's water. We're going to call on that because we can. I mean, that's the end.
Is it sort of a large-scale way of thinking like they do in California where you're not allowed to collect the rainfall that's on your land because the state claims to own all the water
right?
You know, that falls out of the sky on that land up there around Shasta? It's the same for you. You can have water falling on your cattle land, but you can't use it, right?
That's correct.
You have to let it flow
right.
on.
Right. And the Rogue Basin is still at jeopardy also because they're under the same rules that we will be under with that time immemorial claim of the tribe if it's granted as it's being advocated in the KBRA.
This effectively, KBRA, even though it hasn't been painted that way in the media here in Southern Oregon, this is death to business and agriculture.
Absolutely. And that's the sad part of this is, you know, the Rogue Basin and the Klamath Basin were decimated by the spotted owl. And a lot of the communities just cannot survive another hit like that. And that's what this KBRA is going to do. It's going to decimate irrigated agriculture. Some of those that are advocating for this KBRA, they want us to go back to dryland farming. Dryland farming does not work. It absolutely does not work. The water is the lifeblood of agriculture in this area.
Well, dryland farming can work for certain crops. You're not going to grow potatoes on it, though.
In our area in the Klamath Basin, unless you're down on the lake bed, it will not work.
I mean, you don't have enough water there.
Yeah, there's not enough rainfall.
No.
Okay, so...
We have tried dryland farming, and one out of every 5 or 6 years, you might break even if you just strictly dryland farming.
All right, fair enough. If you have any questions, you want to call in and comment with you folks here, 770-5633, 770-KMED, and let's just hit some phones here. Good morning. You're on the Bill Meyer Show. Hello. We're talking KBRA.
Bill, Steve the Marine, dry land farming led to the Dust Bowl of the 1930s. I'm out of here.
Fair enough. There's one comment, 770-5633, 770-KMED. Who else do we have here? Let's just grab to it. Hello, Tom. Good morning.
Good morning. My wife just went down through California, and she says the whole San Joaquin Valley that she saw from Fresno to Redding is just one big torched place, nothing green except along the road stops. She wasn't even aware of the restriction in water to the farmland. So with all this noise going on, I just kind of wonder, my conspiratorial mind wonders if there's, we're getting set up for a period of deliberate starvation for Americans. And so I'll see what the guests have to say.
Thank you very much, Tom. Gentlemen, any comment there?
Oh, I've got a comment for that. There's a very definite movement to basically stifle irrigated agriculture in general. And if you ask those people that are promoting that mindset, their solution is that we should support buying our food from third world countries, where there is no regulations on pesticide, herbicides, anything like that. And that's where we're supposed to get our food from.
You're trying to tell me these people are saying, take out the dams, buy food. In other words, be dependent on other people to grow your food?
Absolutely. And you think we have a problem with oil?
We already did it with oil. So why not agriculture?
All right, gentlemen here, we got a couple minutes left. Maybe you could hit some high points on what can be done at this late moment.
Well, one of the things that we're doing right now, I think, Tom and I really appreciate you having us on today, just creating the awareness, because I don't think folks are really aware of what's going on. And that's a starting point. And then coordinating, the efforts with other folks. But I think today, it's the first time that we've been able to speak to a larger audience about, what's going on over there and what's the KBR agreement going to do to us and what might it do to Jackson County. And so we just want to create an awareness and get people, to speak up about this.
Well, I mean, awareness is great, but awareness is only going to take us so far. I'm just wondering, do you have lawyers involved with this? Are you talking? What can be done via the legal process or the political process as it is? You make it clear that the feds, they just want to get this moving along. Governor Kulongoski wants to make this move along. They just want to make this happen and declare victory and go home and yank things out.
I think there's still the process that you can call and write your senators and your congressmen. Senator Wyden has openly said that he would never support this unless there's basin-wide support. There's absolutely not basin-wide support.
Are you serious that Senator Wyden actually is on the record of saying this?
Yes, twice in the town hall meetings in Klamath Falls, he has reaffirmed that twice.
Okay, what are you holding up there? Hold it up for the webcam there, Larry.
We got this here. Tom, tell them what this is.
That's a set of petitions. It's a pretty heavy chunk.
It's about half a tree.
Yeah, it's about close to 1,900 petitions signed by Klamath River Basin people. It's tribal people, project irrigators, off-project people, citizens in general. When we first started this petition drive here some time back, we thought it would be just for irrigators. And we had people saying, I'm a taxpayer, I'm a ratepayer, I want to sign your petitions. We've had the same kind of response in the town hall meetings. They're not town hall, but public comment meetings. We've had one in Klamath, two in Klamath Falls and two in Siskiyou County. In those meetings, we've had over somewhere in the area of 600 people show up.
And then Senator Whitsitt did a poll as well, and it's 10 to 1 against.
Yes, 10, even
10
our
to
county.
1 in Klamath County against.
So the only people that want to do this, federal government, state government, Pacific Power, and environmentalists.
Yes.
And I want to tell a story that actually happened at the first KBRA meeting that I attended in Sacramento. This tells the mindset of some of these agency people, tribal people, and environmental groups down there. After the meeting was over, I had one of the leaders pushing this along came up to me and he said, this is going to be a tough go. We just need to all sit down and sign this agreement. We'll all get to go back to work and we'll all get a big pot of money. And I did not have a response for that. What could I say? And that is the mindset of these groups down there, and not all of them, but a number of them. That is their absolute mindset, because this is going to fund those agencies and the tribes for decades if this goes through.
It's really effectively a wealth transfer, though,
yes,
from everybody who purchases power and anybody who uses water. Right.
Well, it's also from the taxpayers, because this is going to be paid by the taxpayer.
Which is a wealth transfer. Yeah.
Yes, because it's going to cost $1 billion to start with for the KBRA to be implemented. That's a lot of money. And we're in a depressed economy, and they want to spend $1 billion of our tax dollars on this thing? No way. It just is insane. It's insane to do this.
Well, you have my sympathies, gentlemen. And I know this is tough. kind of wishing that, once again, kind of like with our discussion about food over the weekend, too. Boy, we should have been having this conversation 10, 15, 20 years ago. But, you know, we're having it now. So, what you want to do, what is it, petition drives that you're still working on that you just want to just make it clear to the politicos that there is not support for this?
I think the politicians know there is not the support. I think they really do know that. If they don't, they've got their head in the sand. And some of them do have their head in the sand. Some of them really don't understand it.
Well, give us an example of some politicians in the state of Oregon that do have their head in the sand. Let's name names.
Well, Jason Atkinson, for one.
Oops.
Yeah, oops. He voted for the Senate Bill 76, which takes out the dams. It's the funding issue. I'm not saying maybe he doesn't have his head in the sand, but he knows what the implications are, and he ignored his own constituents. On the Senate floor, he even said, my constituents don't want me to vote for this, but I'm going to vote for it anyway.
What was the explanation he gave?
He's voting for the river. That was his comment. I'm voting for the river. He owns property on the river, I understand. He thinks this is going to save the river. It's not. It's going to destroy the Klamath River. The Klamath River, without those dams in place, dries up in the summer. I mean, you can walk across that.
Well, that's the way it used to do. It wasn't the way it worked back during the so-called natural times.
Yes, you could walk across that river and not get your ankles wet. That makes a lot of sense to take the dams out. Now, what are the fish going to do without the dams in there? The water will dry up in the summer. It traditionally does. Not every year, but very often it does.
Okay. What about any other politicians we know of that... I know Whitsitt's been a good one. He's been a good egg on this.
Yeah, and Representative Gilman and Girard both have been just champions of our efforts to try to have common sense in this process. And I've learned the first meeting down in Sacramento that there is no common sense in this at all. The first thing I asked when they had the agreement in principle advocating for dam removal, I said, what about the other options? Dam removal should be the last option, not the first option. And I got jumped on by numerous people that said dam removal, complete, utter destroying of the dams is the only option that's going to be available. No trucking, no fish bypass.
Well, we're having the same conversations here on a very small scale in connection with what's going on over at Gold Ray Dam.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, there is no such thing as a dam which is allowed to be productive. Get rid of it. Take the federal eco bribes. Off we go. No harm, no foul, I suppose. All right, folks, to find out more about this, the website you want to go to, klamathbasincrisis.org. I'll link to that on my webpage, of course, like I do for all guests here. And also, the heraldandnews.com. That's the newspaper over in Klamath Falls. And there's an online poll that they've been running, on this issue right now.
Yes, there is a poll on there. I mean, we've had other polls. There's another poll that was done here. Northwest River Partners, a three-state poll, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, had the same results as Senator Whitsitt's poll. They want the dams to be left alone, and people just keep ignoring that.
Could you see civil disobedience coming into play on this as the Bucket Brigade did a number of years ago when the farmers were shut off?
I could see that as a very, very likely option. What else do the taxpayers and the voters have? Some of our politicians are ignoring the message that they've been given. I'm not advocating for civil disobedience, but what option does the taxpayer or the ratepayer have? They've been totally ignored in this entire process.
When you're a farmer, when you're a ratepayer, when you are a rancher, when you're an irrigator, and you have nothing left to lose, this could be a very, very interesting time.
Yes, it will.
All right. Once again, Larry Nicholson. And he's a rancher over in the Klamath Basin. Yeah, he's had it in his family for a long, long time. I know you live here, though. It's very interesting. Was that a hobby at this point?
It's a hobby. My brothers and I, we all own it over there, and we run cattle every summer.
Yeah, and Tom Malams, who is the president of the Klamath Off-Project Water Users. You have a website on your place, too?
No, we don't.
Okay,
no, we
all right. That's just your organization. Thanks so much for being on, gentlemen. And stay close, stay in touch, and if anything new breaks out, would you please give us a call, okay?
We sure will. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks.
8:46 on News Talk AM 1440 KMED. Hey, John, how are you doing? Welcome on the Bill Maher Show.
Yeah, pretty good. You know, one of the ways to solve this problem is to have a recall election on these guys when they refuse to listen to the constituents. Get the signatures and throw the bums out. Don't wait for the next election. Do a recall.
which is a very challenging, of course, it's a very difficult procedure, and it's intentionally done that way. A government pretty much wants to protect its own. You know how that goes. But this Jason Atkinson connection, which, frankly, I was relatively unaware of, I haven't paid as much attention to the KBRA as I probably should have, John.
Well, you know,
it's rather troubling, though, that you have someone who discloses that they are a paid consultant for Pacific Power, which benefits greatly. They offload their liabilities.
Yeah.
They offload the liabilities of their property onto the ratepayers. I have to tell you, Warren Buffett must just love the way this situation is playing out. He gets to look like an environmentalist. Jason Atkinson gets to look like, apparently, like an environmentalist. And by the way, I don't know, Jason. I'm just going on the way it looks. The way it looks with this kind of voting process in place. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Richard. Hello, Richard. You're on the Bill Meyer Show. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. The gentleman who were just on talking about the water issues up in Klamath, when they're talking about the potential for civil disobedience, triggered a thought. So let me first be clear. I'm not advocating it, but I want to speak hypothetically here. I sense that the tone of the nation in general is ready for just that, because the politicians coast to coast on many different issues are totally ignoring the wishes of the people. And I think it may be time, again speaking hypothetically here, for the pitchforks and more to show up in front of offices like an Atkinson, who's demonstrated that, contrary to every indication from his constituents, he's still going to vote for something that the people don't wish.
Now, it's interesting that he voted for the Senate bill, which, of course, gets the funding rolling for this particular issue, admits his association with Pacific Power. Okay, fine. And then also admits on the Senate floor that, no, my people don't want this. So who are you working for in this particular case would be the question I would have. Now, I understand there are times that, you know, a leader stands up and says, all right, you're saying this. I know it's the wrong thing to do if I were to do what my constituent says, because otherwise we don't need representation. We would just, plug in little yes, no buttons in all of our homes, and we would just have a direct democracy. You know, we don't have that.
Yep.
But still, you know, apparently some people must think that their districts are awfully safe in order to pull these kind of votes off.
As the French said at one time, and I'll twist, badly pronounce the word, aux barricades.
What was that now? I want to make sure I understand that.
It's AUX. It's to the barricades.
Oh, to the barricades. All right. Thank you for the call. Appreciate that, by the way. Cube emailed me, bill@billmeyershow.com. The Medford Mail Tribune ran Mr. Pitt's column on the death penalty alongside Ms. Parker's, on civility. Mr. Pitts wound up by congratulating himself on being ambivalent about the death penalty, in favor of it for John Allen Muhammad and Timothy McVeigh being put to death, and uncertain about the punishment for others. Ms. Parker lamented a current lack of civility in the national discourse, although duly noting our colorful political Donnybrooks of the past. However, what caught my eye was that neither writer could resist the inexorable pull, of the left's fascination with radio and cable TV talkers of the right. Pitts noticed the thundering in our discourse, and Parker lamented the new media. Of course, they both lament it because they're not part of it. Hugh, appreciate your writing. You know, I have to tell you, I have problems with the death penalty, too. In fact, I've come a long way. I'm solidly for the death penalty in theory. I am against the death penalty now in practice. Because we've seen too many examples of those with the money and the legal dream team, hint, hint, being able to escape the executioner's bullet / syringe, noose, whatever the case may be. Oh, the gas chamber, too, in California. And as long as that is the case, I cannot be in favor of the death penalty. Life in prison, no possibility of parole, and ultimately, given how expensive it is for the taxpayers to have to go through these appeals processes, millions upon millions, it's actually cheaper, too. Yeah, someone shoots the 7-Eleven clerk, gets the needle. Blow away your parents with shotguns for money. You know, like the kids down in California. Hire the dream team. Yeah, doesn't apply to you. And frankly, the Innocence Project has been doing a good job of indicating the problems that we have had with death row. People that have been on death row are getting released. I just assume we stop the process. Not that I wouldn't love to put a bullet in most of these people's heads collectively, these on death row, because most of them are guilty of heinous crimes. But it does not apply equally. Just my opinion.